So I'm scrolling through social media the other day, and I see Netflix is creating this docuseries called Swamp Kings, chronicling Urban Meyer's 2006 through 2009 Florida football teams, or 2010, whatever it is. And I thought to myself, man, what if they did that for Tennessee? What would be some of the stories, time periods, eras that would just feature greatly on the screen in a docuseries? That's today's topic and a whole lot more here on your Tuesday, Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everybody, welcome into it. This is your Tuesday edition of Locked On Vols. Appreciate you guys being here today and joining us on Locked On Vols. You know it. Shout out every single dayers. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for coming back, subscribing and following at Locked On Vols on the YouTube channel and wherever you get your podcast, making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. All right, got a whole lot to talk about today. So as I said in the cold open, really got me thinking. We've done a similar exercise on this maybe 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. It's been a while. So a lot of new listeners, a lot of new viewers, and plus I'm going to change it up a little bit. But a docuseries on a specific Tennessee team, a specific Tennessee era, whatever the case may be, kind of mirroring what Swamp Kings is for Netflix right now, or what it's soon to be. Which era, which team would you want to be highlighting for Tennessee athletics? I thought that'd be a whole lot of fun. Mailbag questions in segment number two, and Tennessee baseball, Clemson regional champions, and their opponent for Super Regionals, it has been said. All that coming up here on today's show. So again, like I said, Swamp Kings, it's going to come out in August. It's going to chronicle the 2006 through 2010 Urban Meyer, 2009 Urban Meyer Florida Gators Club. Two national championships, of course, Heisman-winning quarterback Tim Tebow, tons of off-the-field drama as well. We're not here to talk Florida, but I do like the concept. I'll probably watch it just because I like college football, and I'm a college football nut, and that was my childhood, of course. So that was, you know, kind of when I was in my high school years, and so I'm going to watch it. But I would really enjoy it a whole lot more if it had to do with Tennessee. Eras, teams, sequences. Which ones come to mind if a company, it could be Netflix, could be HBO, could be anything, you know, would come and say, hey, we're going to dive in. We're going to do a deep dive into this specific time period at Tennessee. What time periods or teams or players or whatever come to mind? I wrote a couple of them down here, and I want to hear what you think. In no specific order here, but, you know, I'm just going off my list. 1998 fall camp. Of course, you know Tennessee goes on to win the 1998 national championship. But remember, that's a year after Peyton Manning left. A lot of offensive firepower left. A lot of big wins left your program. And that 98 team, before going on the run and claiming a national championship, the offense at least, spent the entire fall camp getting just beat down by the Tennessee defense. There were a lot of people that didn't think that Tennessee's offense was going to be able to do anything. It was really, really bad. Turns out, Tennessee's defense that year was just so elite with Al Wilson and company, right? I would love to see that fall camp chronicled, and then a little bit about the season, of course. We've seen a lot about the season, but I would love to see that fall camp chronicled. The 2009 Tennessee coaching staff is another one that is big for me. Of course, that was the one season when Lane Kiffin was here in Knoxville. That coaching staff highlighted by four guys. Lane Kiffin, Ed Orgeron, who is the recruiting coordinator, defensive line coach. Of course, he went on and had, you know, various stops, most notably here recently at LSU when he won a national championship. Monty Kiffin, Lane's father, longtime legendary NFL defensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and other teams. He was here as the DC in Knoxville. And then, of course, there were some other guys on that coaching staff, obviously. But the other one to highlight would be Jim Chaney, who Jim Chaney spent time with Lane, spent time with Butch, and then came back and obviously spent time with Jeremy Pruitt as well. I would love to have a docuseries highlighting that coaching staff, the dynamics. I would love to be a fly on the wall in their meeting rooms, all that type of stuff. I think that would be a whole lot of fun. Would not be as fun as the night that Lane Kiffin left. Obviously, there's been books written about it and A Decade of Dysfunction. Shout out to that book. That's awesome. I own it. And it's a good read every now and again, even though I've read it a couple of times. Always a good read. And, of course, it chronicled that night as well. But boy, oh boy. I was in high school. It was my junior year and or my senior year. I can't remember. And I'm sitting there and I remember when it went down and you're seeing it on Facebook, you know, social media posts, all that type of stuff. But, you know, to be out there on that street, mattresses burning, riots, Lane Kiffin being locked up in his office until the next morning till he can leave. Monty Kiffin, or, you know, late in the night, Monty Kiffin spending the night in the Anderson training facility. The press conference when he comes in and, you know, was advised not to even do anything. He comes in and gives just, 30 seconds, whatever it was. Of course, that is still living on YouTube to this day. I would love to see a small little docuseries or something on that night, the night that Lane Kiffin took the midnight train. I think that'd be really, really interesting. And of course, unfortunately, it sent Tennessee into a downward spiral. And a lot of people say when you fired Phil LaFormer, it sent Tennessee into a downward spiral, and that's fair as well. Lane Kiffin, it was an exciting year. It was an okay year. It wasn't huge in terms of wins, but it was a winning record, and it was exciting. But if Lane Kiffin stayed here at Tennessee, how much trouble would Tennessee have gotten in? I think that'd be really fun to explore. The other one I have written down, and this might be the best one, cream of the crop, and we've talked about it before, the 2017 coaching search. The coaching search that's ended with a new athletics director and a new head coach. The coaching search that seemingly got everybody raises around the country. The coaching search that would not end, that lasted 30-plus days. The coaching search that got, John Curry fired. You know, may he rest in peace. Mike Leach was coming here to Knoxville, right? At least that's what John Curry wanted. And that ultimately got him fired. He went MIA for a couple hours. Boy, oh boy, with that time period, I mean, it was hard. Obviously, I was in the media, you know, not to the extent that I am now. But I had just broken through a couple months on the job at the Sports Animal, and you know, that's going on. So, you know, I lived it. I remember it very well. Would love to have that documented. Of course, it was painful. It was painful for Tennessee fans. But now when you look back on it and you've got your guy and you have winning football season and you have big-time wins and a win over Alabama and the Clemson and the Orange Bowl, you can look back on it a little bit more fondly, maybe. Maybe not. But I think that would be just a whole lot of fun because that coaching search had so many twists and turns and it was so unique. And In a bad way. And then you had a new athletics director. I mean, it was the whole thing. Another one, obviously, was when Jeremy Pruitt got fired. And that's, you know, still trying to find some resolution for that to the NCAA as we speak. Of course, they had the NCAA hearing in Cincinnati a couple months ago, and hopefully going to hear back for official, you know, wording from the NCAA literally any day now. But you have the news that drops right before the Texas A&M game of that horrible 2020 season. Just horrible 2020 season. And you go in, and it looks like he's going to survive and everything, and you got kids coming back on campus, freshman move-in day, and then the next day Jeremy Pruitt is fired. And then you have a press conference when you get up there and you talk about all the wrong things that happened. And I understand Tennessee's angle. I get it. It still doesn't make it any more awkward, and it's like, what are you doing? Be quiet. But they were advised to do that, and certainly that was their stance the entire time, and then the cooperation with the NCAA and hiring an outside firm and all those other dominoes that fell. But just that whole process, and then how you landed Josh Heupel and Danny White, of course. Danny White, then Josh Heupel. So we'd love to see that kind of further explored. The Butch Jones era. Painful era, sure, but it started out, you know, there were some highs there. I mean, Tennessee was fun to watch there for a little bit. There were some good football players that were here. There were some wins that were here. 2016 was a whole lot of fun. 2015 was pretty fun. 2017 was horrendous. The years leading up to those years were, you know, building, but it was tough to watch. But Shy Tuttle falling on a helmet. You've got the Jalen Hurd, you know, quitting on the team situation. You've got Rashawn Golden with the double birds at Alabama. I mean, man, oh, man, oh, man. You got Juwan Jennings after Butch Jones is fired, and you have all caps Brady Hoke that kicks Juwan Jennings off the team. And I understand everybody was mad about that, but, I mean, at the time, you know, Juwan, you can't do that. You absolutely can't do that. But, golly, man, what a time. What a time. And, of course, how that ended. And then, of course, that leads into the coaching search, which was not a fun one. And then another one I wrote down was the 2022 Tennessee baseball team. Best team in the country. Home run champions by a mile. Program record 57 wins. The swagger. The bad boys of baseball.
unanimously undisputed best team in the country, number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament or NCAA, you know, baseball postseason regionals. You win, you sweep regionals, and then you fall to Notre Dame at home in super regionals, a game short of Omaha, trying to go to Omaha back-to-back years. And it, obviously, it's unfortunate. I mean, that loss is still fresh. That loss hurts. But it was unique because so many times in college baseball, the number one team in the country, the best team in the country, does not win it. It's been, I want to say, 22 years since the number one seed overall in the NCAA tournaments has won the national title. And so, anyway, I think the 2022 Tennessee baseball team and the personalities and the MLB prospects right now as we speak. And, oh, yeah, one guy on that Tennessee 2022 baseball team is already in the majors. That's Ben Joyce making his major league debut. Now he's made two appearances last week. So those are some that come to mind for me. Now, I know there's plenty others. But if they were going to make a Swamp Kings-type Netflix deal, documentary series, docu-series about Tennessee football or Tennessee athletics, which era, which time period, which player, what would you want to see featured? I think that is always a fun conversation to have. Would love your engagement on this, @_Kaner, @LockedOnVols. Fill out those comments section on the YouTube channel. Would love to hear from you guys on this. I think this would be a whole lot of fun. Hey, when we come back, we'll answer some of your Twitter Tuesday questions. That's what you have to look forward to as we continue on right here on Locked On Vols. But as always, want to give a shout-out to FanDuel Sportsbook. Right now, new customers can get a no-sweat first bet up to $2,500. That is $2,500 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. It's all on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Great promotions every single day, not just for the NBA playoffs, but for NASCAR. You guys know I like to bet on NASCAR. It's fun, it's engaging, and it's where I get most of my earnings from the NASCAR circuit on weekends, right? I have a blast doing that. Baseball's going every single day. Get those futures for college football in as well. All on the safe and secure, easy-to-use app where you get paid instantly. There's no better place to bet on all the NBA playoff action with the finals going on right now than America's number one sportsbook. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn for your no-sweat first bet up to $2,500. That is FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. All right, guys, welcome back into your Tuesday edition of Locked On Vols. Can't thank you enough for being here. Really appreciate it, as always, your time. I know it's precious, so spending it here on Locked On Vols is a whole lot of fun, and I can't thank you enough for that. All right, so let's get into Twitter Tuesday when you guys take over the show, a mailbag edition of the show. It starts now. We'll go ahead and start with Trevor, and Trevor's got a couple questions. Why does it just mean more? He asked me this last week and I forgot it. Sorry, man. Why does it just mean more in the SEC? The SEC has a team contending for a national championship in almost every sport. What sets the SEC apart from the rest of the conferences? Good question. Obviously, football, just, you know, in terms of recruiting, recruiting is so important to football. Obviously, recruiting, getting star players to your campus and then development of those star players, of those prime athletes. There's a lot of good recruiting hotbeds in the South, man. The whole state of Georgia, incredible. Florida, incredible. Louisiana is really, really good. Excuse me. Parts of South Carolina, even parts of North Carolina are good. Tennessee's gotten a whole lot better. I'm not saying, and now, you know, of course, Texas is joining the SEC. I'm not saying that there's not other, you know, hotbeds or talented prospects elsewhere around the country, because there are, don't get me wrong. But I feel like there's so much the quality of recruits and prospects. It's very rich in the South. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. Also, I just think that there's better coaches. I think they assemble better staffs. And there's been a whole lot of success in the Southeastern Conference. Therefore, they have a whole lot of prestige that prospects want to be a part of. Plus, the SEC, because it's so successful, has the largest TV deal, of course, or, you know, it's kind of back and forth now. But nonetheless, you get all this revenue sharing to go out and enhance your facilities and, you know, spend on, you know, cool stuff to go help you recruit. And so I think that has a whole lot to do with it in terms of football. Other sports, I don't know. I mean, basketball is kind of up and down. I know basketball is in a really, really good spot right now. But for the longest time, you know, the Big East, of course, the ACC, Big Ten, solid. You know, it just kind of depends on the year there. Baseball has always been super rich in the SEC. I mean, it really has. It's always been that way. Softball the same way. Women's basketball, of course, track and field. I mean, the list goes on and on. So to answer your question, really, I can only speak for football. there's just a lot of prospects in this area. So that's, remember, it's not really a good answer, but that's kind of what I kind of what I got for you there. The SEC has to schedule Arch Manning and Nico in 2024, right? Yeah, I'm hoping. I know Athlon Sports put out a story a couple days ago kind of projecting every team's eight-game schedule in 2024 in the SEC, and Texas was on there. The Battle of the Orange, just like Tennessee Clemson here a lot lately. Who's the real UT? I think that'd be a whole lot of fun. Plus, you throw into that factor of Nico, Arch, I think that'd be a whole lot of fun. So I'd be all about it, and hopefully we get to see that. Trevor, good stuff, man. I appreciate it. Let's go next to Corey. Let's see here. Appreciate you for saying that you're my first listen every single day, or that I'm your first listen every single day. That's awesome. Are we trending for Ryan Wingo and Williams Nueri? Yeah, talented defensive lineman, you know, top five player in the country. Ryan Wingo, obviously a five-star prospect. Those two guys are scheduled to be, let's see here. I got a text earlier today about some list of official visitors. Let's see. Those guys are all going to be here over the next three weekends. Yeah, Wanneri is supposed to be here at some point in June. And we'll see about Wingo. I don't see him here on this list. But, you know, Wingo, kind of just depending on, you know, whereabouts he is going to. There we go. Wanneri. June 16th is when the defensive lineman is going to be here. So we'll see about Wingo. But, you know, Wanneri is going to be here on June 16th, which is huge, and Rodney Garner can continue that relationship. Teams to beat, I don't know if I would say teams to beat, but Tennessee is right there in position for both of those guys. And when you look at wide receiver, Tennessee's high in it with Mike Matthews, with Amari Jefferson, with Ryan Wingo. If all three of those guys wanted to come, they won't. But if all three of those guys wanted to come to Tennessee, Tennessee would take them in a heartbeat. So it's Tennessee's done a really, really nice job. And again, I've said this a couple of times, you are now recruiting in a pool of rich and elite prospects, whereas a lot of times you weren't. And, you know, credit Tennessee for playing itself into that conversation. So leaderboard, I wouldn't say leader, but Tennessee might be, you know, neck and neck with other teams for both those guys. They are, you know, Tennessee's doing a really, really good job. Let's go on now to Braden. Braden says, what is your favorite part about the yearly It's Football Time in Tennessee magazine? Man, as you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, I've got one right over here. I get it every year. I got it every year when I was little. My grandfather used to have it, and he would keep it on his coffee table. And every time I went over there, I'd see it. I'd look at it, and just kind of brings back memories of young Eric way back in the day. I always loved, when I was little, reading the bios of the players, because I just thought it was really interesting to learn about them. Now that I'm in this industry, and now that I you know, work recruiting a little bit and kind of help out there and cover Tennessee football because it's my job, I know a lot of that now. You know, I know pretty much all that stuff when they sign. But I enjoyed doing that as a kid. I also, even to this day, I enjoy looking at the projected depth charts, because I like to see, you know, what is in that magazine. And not just Football Time in Tennessee, but, you know, every publication puts out projected depth charts. Even we do, right? I like to look at the projected depth charts and seeing which positions I agree with, which positions I don't agree with, all that type of stuff. So I like doing that. Also, I like looking at the local talent sheet that's in the back of that Football Time in you know, Tennessee magazine every single year. Some of the top prospects from the state of Tennessee. Always enjoy looking for players around my area and maybe players that I played against. So that was always fun. But yeah, Football Time in Tennessee. I love that magazine. I get it every single year. Brings back a lot of memories. Okay, last one. We will go to Brian. Got a couple of questions. Why are some Vol fans mad about dropping divisions? Had a conversation with someone the other day, and he said we lose the fun of having an East versus West in the SEC. If we didn't have divisions in 2022, it's Tennessee versus Georgia and Atlanta with a shot at the college football playoff, even with the loss to South Carolina. Your thoughts? Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't really care about divisions. And I know I grew up with the SEC East and the SEC West. I know that came in 1992. So a lot of people older than me did not grow up with those. But, you know, for me, it was the norm. But I don't really care, to be honest with you. I mean, for so long, keep in mind, I mean, the SEC East was kind of the doormat of the SEC. The SEC West was the toughest division. I mean, for so long. It was Alabama. It was Auburn. It was LSU. You know, Texas A&M was in that conversation. You know, a couple of times Mississippi State was up there with Dak. I mean, again, there's guys all over the SEC and all that. But, you know, the SEC East went through some really tough growing pains, right? In the early 2010s, right? I mean, it was South Carolina. Florida was struggling. Tennessee was struggling. It was, you know, Missouri won the conference its first, or Missouri won the East its first 2 years in the SEC. That shouldn't happen, right? So for me, I don't really care about divisions. I think it'll be fun. Give me the top two teams with a winning percentage. Let's go to Atlanta and let's see who the SEC champion is. I think it'll be an absolute blast. And I do like removing the handcuffs of East and West. If a team from the East is the second best team in the SEC, it deserves the opportunity to go to Atlanta. That's just kind of how I view it. So I don't know why a lot of people are getting upset about it. To me, I don't care. I would rather not play Missouri every single year and have an opportunity to play Ole Miss, you know, bi-yearly. To me, that's more exciting than playing Missouri every single year. To me, that's more exciting than playing South Carolina every year. Let me, you know, give me Arkansas every other year. You know, that's fun for me. That's what I'm excited about. So anyway, that's kind of how I view it. A mailbag edition of the show every single Tuesday right here on Locked On Vols. Appreciate you guys for sending those questions in. Hopefully I answer them to your liking. And let's talk a little Tennessee baseball. When we return, Tennessee baseball has its opponent for the Super Regionals. I'll give you my thoughts on that here in a moment, right here on Locked On Vols. All right, guys, welcome back to your Tuesday edition of the show, Locked On Vols. Appreciate you being here today. I'm talking a little Tennessee baseball here to wrap things up. We discussed the Clemson game on Saturday. So we discussed that on Monday and how just incredible it was. The 14-inning marathon, Hunter Ensley being 0-for-6 with four strikeouts, down to your last strike, and you push forward the game-winning run by doubling in Maui Ahuna. You know, that's baseball, right? Zane Denton, down to your last strike, putting Tennessee ahead 5-4 in the bottom or the top of the ninth inning with two outs. The Christian Moore and Blake Burke starting that rally. Cal Stark throwing two players out defensively behind the plate. Maui Ahuna playing really well. Chase Burns on in relief, which was fantastic. Seth Halverson closing out the game the last three innings and a third, picking up the win. That game was an instant classic, and that game is one that we won't soon forget for sure. And so we discussed that on Monday's show, and I recorded Monday's show Sunday before the championship game because I knew it was going to be a late night. Tennessee went on and completed a sweep of the Clemson Regional, taking down Charlotte by a score of 9-2, and Tennessee won its regional play. First regional series win on the road in program history, advancing to your fifth super regional ever in program history. That's a whole lot of fun. Tony Vitello is now 11-2 in regional play as Tennessee's head coach, and Tennessee has now won 9 straight games in regional play. Swept the regional field in 2021, swept the regional field in 2022, and swept the regional field in 2023, this time on the road. A whole lot of fun. Tennessee 9-2, an excellent pitching performance from Drew Beam. 6 innings, 2 runs is what he gave up off 4 hits, a career high 10 strikeouts, tying a career high 10 strikeouts. He also had 10 strikeouts against Florida this year and against Alabama in 2022. He had no walks. He was really, really good in that game. And because of the efforts from Chase Dolander, Chase Burns, and Seth Halverson, Tennessee was in excellent position pitching-wise to come in there and win that game on Sunday. Now, this time of the year, you want to be wary. You want to be prepared, but you can't play scared, right? Scared money don't make no money, right? You know, scared money don't make money. That's what Will West always says. And, you know, Tennessee had A.J. Russell there to start on Monday if needed, but Tennessee was winning so much by the end of the game. A.J. Russell came in and pinched the ninth inning because he needed some action. But Tennessee was in such a great spot that it had Drew Beam, it had Candon Sewell, and it had A.J. Russell ready to go win that game over Charlotte and win it convincingly. And that's what Tennessee did. 9-2 on Sunday, the winning score. Tennessee just continued to pound the baseball, finished with 8 hits, scored 9 runs. A big day for Zane Denton. He homered again. Christian Moore homered twice. He picked up regional MVP honors. I'll get to that here in just a moment. But it was a really fun game because Charlotte's a good ball club. Charlotte showed a lot of heart. Charlotte showed a lot of tenacity to fall to Tennessee by a score of 8-1 I believe it was 8-1. Yeah, 8-1 on Friday night. Come back and win a couple of games. Take down Clemson. And take down Clemson again after that 14-inning marathon game. And it was a game that was really, really close. Come and play Tennessee. And for a little bit, it was a close game. And then Tennessee kind of blew it open. So Tennessee wins the regional. That's exciting. And, you know, for as frustrating as this baseball team has been for points and times this year, doesn't it make it a little sweeter, though, right? It makes it a little bit sweeter that knowing, and if you guys listen to me, watch my work on VolQuest or you know, listen to The Porch or whatever it is, you know, Tennessee's had the ingredients all year. You know, Tennessee has the arms, and it wasn't perfect, but Tennessee was perfect this past weekend, and a large reason for that is because of the pitching performances. What you got out of Andrew Lindsay on Friday, 116 pitches, one earned run over seven innings, incredible. You know, what you got from Chase Burns in relief on Saturday and Seth Halverson, what you got from Drew Beam on Sunday. Tennessee, in terms of, you know, kind of going down the schedule and going down the list, its pitching was about, wasn't perfect, but it was really, really good, about as good as you could have hoped for. And that's a big reason why Tennessee won that regional. So the all-Clemson regional team was announced, and Tennessee had four representatives. Christian Moore, a unanimous selection at second base. You had Zane Ditton, a unanimous selection at third base. You had Griffin Merritt, a selection at DH/utility. And you had Andrew Lindsay, one of the pitchers. And Christian Moore was named Clemson Regional MVP. And it was really, really cool because, let's see here, I totaled these up. On the weekend, you had, where are they? Okay, on the weekend, Christian Moore was 7-for-10, 4 home runs, 8 ribbies, and 6 runs scored. Easily the best of the regional. That's why he was regional MVP. And the reason he wasn't unanimous regional MVP is because some people voted for Zane Ditton, who Zane Ditton was very productive, only had 3 hits. All 3 hits were home runs over the weekend. 3-for-17, 3 for 12, excuse me, 3 home runs, 5 RBIs, and 3 runs scored. So Tennessee just kind of finished the job, and they did a really, really good job doing it. And now what we know is it will be Southern Miss in the NCAA Super Regional. Southern Miss fought out of the loser's bracket, right? It lost its first game in regional play, and it had to win 3 straight. It lost to Samford, the 3 seed, by a score of 4-2 in 10 innings. As a 2 seed, Southern Miss turned around. They eliminated Auburn in an elimination game on Friday or on Saturday. They eliminated Auburn in an elimination game on Saturday. They eliminated Samford on Sunday. They played Penn and won 11-2 with a late offensive burst late Sunday night. And then they turned around on Monday and they beat Penn again with, you know, neither team had pitching left. And they beat Penn again. I think the final score was like 12-7 or, you know, 13-8 or whatever it was. And so a lot of credit to Southern Miss. I'll have more breakdowns as the week goes on, obviously, once I dive into the stats and everything. But that is who Tennessee's opponent is going to be. The only question is, and we'll find out today at 10 a.m., so follow me at _Kaner over there at VolQuest.com. We'll have complete coverage when it's announced. Because Tennessee is a 2 seed, and because Southern Miss is a 2 seed, who gets to host the regional? And that's a really good question. Who gets to host the regional? The NCAA baseball committee will make that call. If it was Penn who won that game, Penn was the 4 seed, then it would have been Tennessee because Tennessee was the 2 seed. Technically, the committee will have to make that selection, but it would have been Tennessee for sure. But how does this process work? Well, I kind of broke it down on my baseball 3-2-1 over at VolQuest.com. And because Southern Miss is a 2 seed, because Tennessee is a 2 seed, this is kind of how the process would work. According to the NCAA baseball rules, the selection committee shall review the hosting proposals according to the site selection criteria, quality and availability of the facilities, revenue potential, and other available accommodations to determine the host. If only one of these teams has submitted a proposal, the team shall host if the proposal is acceptable. What that means is, say, you know, it's just not a foregone conclusion that Tennessee would host if Penn won, even though Tennessee was the higher seed. It is highly likely, but technically, the committee would have to accept the bid. Each baseball team, before postseason play begins, each baseball team that thinks that there's a chance that they could host a game or a regional or a super regional, they turn in a bid to the NCAA. The NCAA has those bids. Just because Southern Miss and Tennessee didn't host a regional, obviously there's an opportunity now for both of these teams to host the Super Regional. The NCAA still has that bid. So now they will take that bid and they will review it. And again, what's it kind of look like? This is from Jeff Williams, who's the NCAA media representative. He said this to Knoxville News earlier this week. Since there is no true seeding of the number twos in regionals, it would largely be looking at the merits of the two bids, venue, hotels, guarantees, etc., but it would fully be a committee decision. Well, if you look at it in terms of playing resume, it's no contest. It's Tennessee. Not to mention Southern Miss against SEC teams this year. They haven't played many, but they've been very bad against SEC teams. But you look at the RPI. Tennessee is at number 17. Southern Miss is at number 20. You look at the strength of schedule. Tennessee is at number 22. Southern Miss is at number 50. You look at who won the tougher regional. Hands down, Tennessee beat the number 4 overall seed. That region, Clemson. Tennessee won that regional. Southern Miss beat the worst team in the regional. That would be Auburn, who had the 16 seed. I believe it was 16 seed. Let me double check on that real quick. Okay, Auburn was the 13 seed, excuse me, but it was one of the last host seats, one of the last hosting teams that got a spot. So anyway, it was on the brink for sure. Tennessee won the tougher regional. Both of these teams hosted a regional and a super regional last year, so it's not like either one of them is not accommodating. Technically, Southern Miss Baseball Stadium is a little bit bigger than Tennessee's, but not by much, so that really wouldn't play into a factor, in my opinion. But, I mean, if you look at resume, baseball resume this year, hands down, it's Tennessee. In my opinion, I would much rather travel to Knoxville, Tennessee, than to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. That is just me. But the national narrative on Sunday night was if Southern Miss continues to win and pulls this things off, that they have a great shot at hosting and Tennessee would be to travel. I've talked to people over Tennessee all day on Monday. It really depends on who you talk to. We just don't know what the committee will weigh heavily. Will it be resume, playing resume? Because if so, it's hands down Tennessee. Will it be other factors that we don't know about? You know, we'll have to see. So that announcement will be made on Tuesday morning at 10 a.m., and so at that point in time, we will know if Tennessee is going to host a regional or if it or super regional or if it will be on the road to Southern Miss. I pray, and please pray for me, that I am not driving 7.5 hours to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. I just don't want to do that, guys. I really don't. That's not what I'm wanting to do. That's not what I'm about. I'd much rather stay here in the great city of Knoxville, Tennessee, and you know, cover a super regional and go home and, you know, sleep in my bed at night. So, you know, we will see. But both teams are deserving to host, and the committee will come down and decide exactly which team will get that opportunity, and we'll find out later this morning at 10 a.m. Really just kind of depends on who you talk to, but Tennessee is preparing as if it will host a super regional, and regardless, Tennessee is going to the super regional, the 5th super regional in program history, and Southern Miss is the team that stands in its way for making a return trip to Omaha. Of course, the Volunteers made it to Omaha back in 2021. So fun week ahead of Tennessee baseball. All right, that is going to do it here for this edition of Locked On Vols. Can't thank you enough for being here. Shout out everydayers. If you're not an everydayer, come back tomorrow and you'll figure out what an everydayer is. Please like and subscribe this video. You know, like this, turn on your notifications so you'll be alerted every time a new episode drops. Rate me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Leave me a positive review if you don't mind. All that stuff really helps grow this show. And most importantly, thanks for being here, and I hope you are back tomorrow. @_Kaner, @LockedOnVols. You can always find this show. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, everybody. This is Locked On Vols.